case, the United States v. Locke. Mr. Bailey.
Your Honor.
If it may please the court, counsel, I'm, of course, Chris Bailey, and I represent Alfred Locke on this case, and I'll start my comments and argument to the court with where I started in front of the district court, which was 4A1.2 sub C sub 2 of the sentencing guidelines specifically states that loitering and offenses similar to them are never counted toward the criminal history category. That was my first comment out of the box, and I believe it's still valid today as when I said it in front of Judge Randa. Judge Randa, in making his ruling, in which he actually commented if this may need further review, and here we are.
But isn't loitering plus? I defer to Judge Sykes, but it looks like Milwaukee has a loitering plus ordinance.
We actually have more than one of them, because apparently one loitering was not enough, so we decided to add drug-related activity, prostitution-related activity, and decided to add some bigger fines to those things.
You have to keep moving in Milwaukee, right? You want to be hanging around anywhere.
We really don't like you loitering anywhere in Milwaukee, so if you visit us, you got to keep on walking.
But you're not arguing there's anything wrong with the ordinance.
No, there's not. I will argue, though, as pointed out, it is broad. Because if you look at loitering drug-related, there is a litany of different ways that someone could be hit with this citation. If you loiter in an area known for drug trafficking, that by itself can be loitering drug-related activity. Now, the trouble in Milwaukee, and this is just a fact that's in the transcripts, they destroy all their records every 7 years in the Milwaukee police. So the only thing we had in the PSR, as mentioned in court, was I was standing around with a group of people, this being my client. I got ticketed for loitering, drug-related activity. That's all the district judge knew. That he was
the probation officer didn't. They already been destroyed, so he or she couldn't have gone and looked at the record.
Right, there was no record to look at. It was more than 7 years old. My client's best recollection was both these tickets were in the same month. He was with a group of guys. He never said, while I was helping deliver drugs or anything like that, that's all I could remember. Now, that being the case, I didn't think that related to a state charge like possession with intent to deliver, or he was doing a furtive gesture transferring drugs or money. He was standing on a street corner, and I'm going to speculate at this point because that's all he could remember, in an area of high drug activity, and he got the ticket. And given that being the case, I just don't think that related in such a way to give him a criminal history point. In this case, 2 points. And, of course, that moved him over a category. And, of course, Judge Randa, when passing sentence on this gentleman, put him at the bottom of the advisory guideline. Now, I'm asking the court to do is remand this, say to Judge Randa, we don't think he should count in the criminal history category, and as such, put him in criminal history category 3 and sentence him at 70 to 87 months. Now, that's the guidance I'm looking for from the court, and I think it should...
Counsel, and that ticket requiring a court appearance and a plea?
Well, no, it's a municipal ticket. Technically, it just goes to the municipal court. You default. They issue one of two things. If you have your license, they'll take your license away. It used to be 5 years back in the 90s. Now it's 2 years. If you have no license, they potentially issue a commitment. Typically, in Milwaukee County, it's $25 for each... it's 1 day for each $25 on that fine. Or there's a couple of different ways around that. Actually, you don't have to pay the whole fine. You can come in and do community service if you actively want to take care of it. So it's not a required court appearance such as the first offense drunk driving is in Wisconsin. That's the only mandatory appearance on a municipal court in Milwaukee. Everything else is, oh, you didn't show up, too bad, you're found guilty by default, here's a fine, you better pay it, and here's the things we're going to do to you. So there was some discussion in the government's brief as well as in my reply brief about looking at these loiterings and about the penalties. And, of course, you can't get a commitment greater than 90 days. However, it's interesting, of course, if someone gives matches to someone who's under 13, you could possibly get the same days in jail or near to it. And the reason I point that out is loitering is loitering, and all the drug-related activity does is you can get a much greater fine. And that was the idea behind it, to try to quell certain activities, try to suppress them on certain parts of town. I'm arguing to you I don't think that puts this into a category that says, okay, let's give them criminal history points.
Well, the offense is defined differently than the generic loitering and requires, as Judge Keeney said, more. It's a loitering plus. It requires circumstances manifesting the purpose of inducing, enticing, soliciting, or procuring another to engage in illegal drug activity. It's not just a status sort of offense where if you're in a certain spot, you're guilty.
Well, if you look further in that same statute, it's a pretty long municipal. It gives certain, like a laundry list of different ways that this can happen, one of which is remaining in an area that is frequent for drug use. In fact, if you look at 106-35.6 sub 2, and either the following, frequents either on foot or a motor vehicle a known area of illegal drug activity, semicolon, and that goes on to more lists. If he was to hang around the same street corner, and that was identified by the City of Milwaukee Police as a known drug area, he could be issued that ticket. And if he's asked what he's doing there, I understand the code goes on to say you have to give a good reason. Well, of course, loitering presumes that you don't have any good reason to be there. If you're sitting there working a job, delivering newspaper, well, then you're moving. But if you're a corner street, a vendor of some sort, then you have a reason to be there. Apparently, he was with a group of guys, and I'll once again speculate because my client's memory wasn't the best. He was with a group of people, and they were in an area that was high drug activity. Did that mean necessarily he had drugs or were using drugs at the time? No, but under I don't know because he couldn't remember. But under the municipal code, if it's just an area identified as having high drug activity, then he could be issued the citation. Whether it be looking in the past, like the Cherry Street mob was in that area around Cherry Street, Galena, if you were sitting on that street corner, you could be issued this ticket.
Because I'd have to frequent it.
Well, I don't know, of course. But the trouble is, and I guess, of course, Your Honor, being more familiar with Milwaukee, there's certain parts of the city of Milwaukee that are just known that as drug areas, and that's a part of any city. Every city has a bad part. No city is perfect. And with this municipal code and with my client's recollection being the only facts we can really know about this citation, I don't think that these set of facts move it into a criminal history category. And the language going back to the sentencing guideline itself is so specific that they're never counted. I don't think you can use sub 1 of that section saying similar to a state law to then trump something that says never. I think the plain language of that just says never counted, and I don't think it should count. And I understand, one of the problems we have down in the district court is some of the judges want to count this. Some of them don't want to count these loitering drug-related activities.
We're going to try to clear that up.
Thank you. And that's one of the reasons I'm here.
Is this what was the sentence he received? Was it 80?
84 months.
84 months. Isn't that, though, within the range, even if you drop down to the other, to the lower range, it's still within that range, right?
It most definitely is, but it was on the bottom of the 84 to 105 months. If you were to remanded
this, the judge might give the same sentence.
I have to concede that that's true. They both intersect, but given the fact he put him at the bottom of those guidelines, also granting the downward departure because of his health reasons, I believe the judge was adhering to the guidelines, although advisory for uniformity, and I believe it would have gone lower than that, at least if he's given the instructions from this court that those loitering tickets shouldn't count. And I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bailey. Mr. Koenig?
It please the court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I appear on behalf of the government. I promise not to loiter at the podium for too long. The question before the court is whether the defendant's two prior convictions for loitering illegal drug activity should count towards his criminal history. And as opposing counsel has pointed out, this is an issue that does recur in our district. So it's not only important to Mr. Locke, but it's important within our district. Two things I'd like to address before moving on to the guidelines section in question. One is my opponent's emphasis on the factual uncertainty about what gave rise to these citations back in 1995. I think cases like Shepard and Taylor indicate that the court should take a categorical approach and focus on the offense of conviction and not be troubled necessarily by the fact that we don't know exactly what happened on those two different occasions.
Isn't that the problem here? How do we know what the offense of conviction was when we don't have the paperwork to support it?
Well, the basic offense, of course, is spelled out at the beginning of the ordinance. I'll concede there are different ways that it can be violated, but...
Well, what I mean was that the records have been destroyed, and all this is on his record. His recollection is the only way it came up, isn't it? I mean, the probation officer didn't see the document.
That's correct, Your Honor, but there wasn't any dispute as to the conviction itself or, you know, which ordinance was involved or anything like that. The other matter I'd like to clear up is the standard of review. In drafting my brief, I indicated that the government's position was that this case should be reviewed for plain error, and I believe I was in error at that time. Reviewing the sentencing transcript, particularly page 5, I think you'll find that Mr. Bailey did raise the issue sufficiently to preserve it for appeal, and so the question should be reviewed de novo. Right. I just wanted to clear that up. And I think moving now to guideline section 4A1.2C, I think it would be fair to say this is a somewhat difficult guideline. It uses, there are exceptions nestled within exceptions, and the guideline uses the word similar 3 different times without any commentary explaining what that means. So I'm hoping that if I could just map out my understanding of the guideline and then focus on why the government doesn't think that these prior convictions are excluded under subsection C2. Subsection C1 lists misdemeanor and petty offenses that sometimes count. And local ordinances are on that. Local ordinance violations are on that list. C2 lists misdemeanor and petty offenses that are never counted, and loitering is on that list. So in order for Locke's prior convictions to count, they must meet one of the criteria that allow them to be counted under C1, the sometimes category, and they must not be excluded under C2, the never list, if you will. And rather than get bogged down in all of C1, I'd like to focus on the part of it that allows a listed offense to be counted if it is similar to an instant offense. And as your honors are aware, instant offense refers to the crime for which the defendant is being federally sentenced.
I don't think we have any dispute. Mr. Koenig, arguably,
yes, Your Honor.
The loitering drug-related activity, which is, I think, what it's called, or illegal drug activity ordinance violation, is more similar to generic loitering than it is similar to drug conspiracy.
We're arguing similar to drug conspiracy, but not similar to garden variety loitering. Yes. Did I answer your question?
Well, that's the argument that you're making, but according to the legal steps that you just took us through, and I think you correctly stated them, we have to find that sub 2 does not apply, sub C2 does not apply, and that this offense is, we have to be able to conclude that this offense is not similar to generic right. loitering, but then we also have to be able to conclude that this offense, loitering-illegal drug activity, is similar to the offense of conviction here, which is a drug conspiracy.
Right. Well, I think
or at least we have to conclude that Judge Randa was correct.
Sure. I think the second part of your question, which is actually the first part of the guideline, is an easier question, and I don't think there's really any dispute. My opponent will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think loitering with the intent to engage in illegal drug activity is similar to conspiring to distribute cocaine.
Well, loitering with intent to distribute, that just means you've shown up to deal with drugs, right? Which every drug dealer, unless you're beamed down, has to do, right? I mean, you got to be there. So what's the similar? I mean, what to drug dealing? I mean, to purchase or sell drugs, you got to be on the scene. Don't have to, but for purposes of our case, this deals with being on the scene, right?
Well, not just any scene, Your Honor. It's the ordinance is very detailed. It has all these different indicia of drug dealing activity, frequenting a known drug trafficking area, beckoning to a known drug dealer, furtive gestures, and so on. I forget what they all are.
And it applies to purchasers, not just sellers.
That's a good point, Your Honor.
Which arguably makes this dissimilar to drug conspirators.
Right. I think they have more in common than they don't have in common, if you put it that way. I mean, similar, obviously the court will have to figure out as a starting point what it means by similar. You know, you could look at... I think they have to do more than just overlap a little bit to be similar, but they don't have to be identical either. I think the real dispute we have, if I could move on to C2, is with that part of the guideline, which says that the following prior offenses and offenses similar to them, by whatever name they are known, are never counted. And loitering, again, is on that list. I think the question that the court should ask is what purpose did the commission have in mind with this language? And I would suggest that it's designed to capture variations in nomenclature that's used to describe petty offenses from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. To paraphrase Shakespeare, loitering by any other name would smell like loitering. Okay? And I think the example I used in my brief was that if a jurisdiction called this crime hanging around instead of loitering, it would still be loitering because it's punishing the same conduct.
But don't we start with a premise under the guidelines that just loitering doesn't count?
Yes.
So whether we call it hanging around or loitering, we all know what we're talking about generally, sort of aimless, if you will, presence.
Loafing.
Loafing, Judge Kaney says. If that, so that's the starting point, right? That isn't in the universe of bad conduct to be considered under the guidelines.
That's right, Your Honor. But that's
the
not...
The foundation is kind of mushy, right? It's not a solid foundation, this hang-around loitering thing.
Well,
And what guidance we have is... from the Supreme Court, which you may say is sparse, would be the city of Chicago, which, I mean, neither of you cite, but I'm sure you're aware of. And to the extent one can read from the dissents, which are very strong and powerful, Justice Thomas, Justice Scalia, they speak about how effective these anti-loitering things can be. However, they were short a vote. So what little we have from the court is that the possession arrow doesn't seem to be favorable
unless we give him
in
another,
this area.
Unless we give him another shot.
Judge Kenny would percolate up perhaps another case.
If I'm not mistaken, you're referring to the city versus Morales, the city of Chicago versus
I
Morales.
I don't mean to suggest that it you know, there's a direct correlation to our case, but I'm trying to read the tea leaves as best we can here.
Sure. Just by way of background, I think that the trend in this area is to craft ordinances that are much more detailed. Which all involve vagueness challenges. So here we are with a very detailed loitering illegal drug activity statute. I would submit.
Who decides what's a drug area? Who's the determiner of loitering in a drug area? Is that the incident reports to the police department? Is that what details or outlines or cabins a drug area?
It would appear to be a judgment that's left to the peace officer, Your Honor.
That's a kind of a moving target, isn't it, Mr. Cohen?
Potentially it is, and if this were a constitutional challenge to the ordinance...
If in the lobby of the Pfister, I'm not suggesting this ever occurs, there were two transactions... drug transactions, whether or not they resulted in any convictions or prosecutions. Let's say a police officer was aware of that. And then the following week, he makes an arrest based on that. Would we say that Lobby the Pfister, at least for the purposes of that two-week period, has become a drug area in downtown Milwaukee?
Well, again, Your Honor, I'm not here to defend the amount of discretion that the city has given to its police officers under the ordinance, but I would submit that it's a distinct offense with different elements and more serious penalties. It's not similar to garden variety loitering, and we would ask you to affirm.
All right, thank you, Mr. Coney.
Thank you.
Mr. Bailey?
Thank you, Your Honor.
One of the questions I heard asked from the panel was, where did the record of these convictions come from? It was more than just his recollection. Here, I'll try to be brief on this because my time's limited. City of Milwaukee puts everything on a website, and you can access it over the Internet. Now, however, that for some that reason, that Internet page has a limitless amount of memory. However, their database inside the police administration building is limited to 7 years. So although on the Internet you see this printout that just says, my client's name, here's the case number, here's the conviction, that's it. It just floats around out there. But if you try to pull the ticket, if you try to pull the specifics, they don't exist anymore. They're down in the landfill somewhere because they destroy all the paper records and they purge their computer records. I guess that was just a policy they did, but it still remains in cyberspace. So all the convictions had a case number, but that's all we had. Bottom line, these are a couple of tickets. And the purpose of these ordinances was to prevent people driving around in parts of town and fueling the drug trade. I thought it was way more geared towards purchasers than it was to drug dealing. Because I would think if an officer sees a hand-to-hand transaction in the street, they wouldn't issue a ticket for that. It would be a felony offense. And I'm sure they do. Because I get those cases all the time. Officers see the hand-to-hand gesture, approaches them, runs their name, they have a warrant. So the search incident to arrest, oh, look, they have a couple hundred dollars on them, a pager, and a bunch of rocks of crack cocaine. And those cases end up in state court. These cases were in municipal court. And we have no other details to say there are anything but a couple of loitering tickets that were in maybe a drug area. Because my client said, I was hanging around with a group of people. And I don't think there are anything more than that. The language of the guidelines is very clear. They shouldn't count.
Has there been a constitutional challenge to these ordinances?
There was a prior statute that talked about just someone being a vagrant in Milwaukee. I can't remember the case site, but it had something to do with you just can't, and if you allow me to finish, you can't just be ticketed just for being unkept and looking like you're not up to no good. But I haven't had a constitutional challenge that I've directly seen on these, and many times people just default on them anyway, so they don't get much beyond the municipal court. Thank you.
Thanks, Bailey. Thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Bailey, you who also have an additional thanks from the court for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Locke. All right. The court will stand in recess.